used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
And the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Western Canada's only radio program focusing on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM on Friday, September 15th, 2017. For the next hour, I'm your host, Jen Dobell, and I'm joined in studio by a whole bunch of animal-loving vegan co-hosts, Allison Cole.
Hi there.
Amir Ali.
Hey.
Sinead Sanders.
Hello.
And Natalie Zarocco. It's a party
Hi.
In here. So today's show features interviews with our new co-host, Natalie, who will tell us about her transition to a vegan lifestyle and how she uses her time to advocate for animals. And then we will speak with Maria Sorosky, co-founder of Vancouver Orphan Kitten Rescue Association. I spent the last week obtaining signatures in support of Bill S-203, the Canadian bill to end captivity of whales, dolphins, and porpoises. And I have the petition in front of me, so I'm just going to read that out to everybody who hasn't heard about it. So it's the Senate and Parliament assembled, ending the captivity of whales and dolphins Act, Bill S-203. We hereby ask the Senate and Parliament assembled to phase out the captivity of whales and dolphins in Canada. Whales and dolphins are intelligent, social, and roaming creatures. Scientific evidence shows that they suffer when kept in captivity, whereby a whale tank display is equivalent to a swimming pool. The practice is cruel. We therefore ask senators to expeditiously pass the ending the captivity of whales and dolphins Act, Bill S-203, which was tabled by Senator Wilfred Moore and is now sponsored by Senator Murray Sinclair. Please do the right thing and support this evidence-based policy. So I just want to talk about some of the misconceptions that I've been hearing about from the public. I'm getting a lot of the same comments. So the first thing people are saying to me is, I didn't know we still had whales in captivity. And so I'm just letting them know, yes, we have them at, we have cetaceans in captivity. We have a dolphin at the Vancouver Aquarium, and we have about 40 belugas in a tank in Marineland Niagara Falls. A lot of them aren't getting along, so they're doing what's called raking, which is where they swim up along each other, and they rake each other with their teeth. They've got scars on their bodies from this. So I've been asking the public to check out the film Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered and look up Phil Demers, who's a Marineland whistleblower. He used to be a walrus trainer there. So have any of you engaged with the public about Bill S-203?
I've spoken with people about it before. Yes, I haven't collected. I haven't been going around with the petition as you have yet. But I think it's great that you're doing this. It's such an important issue. And one thing that one of the most common things you hear people saying about captive whales and dolphins is, well, if we don't see them in captivity, then how will we care about them? But you said it right. We have cetaceans in captivity. It's some of the most famous whales in the world, like humpbacks, for example. Tons of people care about them. Tons of people speak about them, and there are no humpback whales in captivity.
Sinead, this reminds me of a sign that you were holding. This is the day I met you. We were at a Vancouver Aquarium protest. I went up to you and I said, you have the best sign I've ever seen. Do you remember what it said?
Was it the one... Oh, what if there's many signs to draw from.
Okay, I'll remind you. It said something like, if this is what you consider education, you're not teaching your child much. I didn't say that right.
Oh, if seeing them captive makes you smile, captivity isn't teaching you much.
Right. And I hate that comment that I get from the public about, what about the poor children? They've literally worded it that way. What about the poor children?
So one of my responses is to that. I was just chatting with my friend recently who has kids, so could plant a seed in his head. And I just said to him, you know how kids just love dinosaurs? Like, I grew up with my favorite dinosaur was the Stegosaurus. And kids just know like all kinds of dinosaurs. They know everything about them. Has any child ever met a dinosaur in person?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a perfect one.
That puts it into perspective.
Absolutely. Right? And there's great documentaries like Planet Earth. Something else that people are saying to me is, well, what will happen to the ones that are rescued? And I just want to bring this up. A lot of the animals that we're told are rescued or made to believe are rescued are not. So that's something that I want people to scratch beneath the surface a little bit more on. And also, this is not going to affect rescued animals. This is just for animals that are taken from their perfectly healthy, free lives and placed in captivity. Activity for profit and entertainment.
And people should tune into our show from, when was it, a couple weeks ago?
2 weeks ago.
Yeah, because you'll learn about how these cetaceans that are in captivity or were at Vancouver Aquarium, some are dead, they weren't rescued. They were taken from the dolphin trade.
And a lot of people who run zoos and circuses will say that there is valid research being done. And if you watch the film Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered, there are many interviews with cetacean experts who say that there is no valid research coming out of these facilities. In fact, most of the research, they say, is to how to figure out how to keep these animals alive longer in captivity, because they're dying in captivity. So please check out Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered. It's free online. It's just a 1 hour film, and I guarantee it'll change your opinion about that place if you're a supporter.
Thank you so much for mentioning that. I've been meaning to watch that documentary for so long. I'm going to do that as soon as I get home today.
Good for you. Yeah. Well, we have a couple of court cases coming up with the Vancouver Aquarium, so there's never been a better time to educate yourself about what's really going on there. And the Vancouver Aquarium is suing the filmmaker. He's a Vancouver filmmaker, and he's not being sued for defamation because everything in the film is true. He is being filmed for copyright infringement. So what happened was he took some video of, well, he showed some of the video that the Vancouver Aquarium has on their website, and he found that to be a bit like propaganda, so he countered that with the truth that he discovered in his 2 years of research, and they're saying that he didn't have access to that, and our lawyers arguing that it's fair use. Really all it's doing is shining more light on the darker side of the Vancouver Aquarium, because
it's a pretty weak attack if that's all they can come up with.
Every time this is in the news, it just gets more media attention on what we're trying to bring media attention to. We don't have any money to get this film out to the public, so that helps. Thank you very much, Vancouver Aquarium.
Yeah.
So let me just see what else, other questions and comments am I getting from people? I just want to clear everything up for the public, because these are really common questions and comments I'm getting.
One of the things that I just don't really understand or grasp is how people still can't understand how seeing these animals in captivity doesn't teach you anything about them, because they're not behaving in any way whatsoever how they would in the wild.
Right.
So I just don't understand why that's so hard of a concept to grasp.
I know. And I say to them, these animals are depressed. They're lobbing around their tanks, or they're doing circles, and you're not seeing them do exactly anything that they would be doing in the wild. You're learning about what they look like when they're depressed. And I would never, I don't have kids, but I would never let them go to these kinds of facilities. I think that would be sending a strong message to them that humans are here to oppress animals that are innocent and vulnerable, and we can do whatever we want because we are bigger and more powerful than them. I don't want to send that message to kids.
Absolutely. Yeah. And a lot of kids can see that just by looking at the dolphins. I remember when I was maybe 7 years old, I went to the West Edmonton Mall with my dad, and I don't know if they still do, but at the time they had two dolphins, and they were so depressed looking. It was insane.
Mm-hmm. That's really sad.
Well, I used to go see Tilikum when I was a kid. I grew up in Victoria, and we had Tilikum, the orca whale, in captivity at Sealand. And Sealand wasn't even a concrete tank. It was a net in the ocean. And I have a picture of me with my preschool or kindergarten class and our little butts hanging over the tank looking at him. And no offense to my parents, because I love them, but I don't know what they were thinking. I cannot believe they took me there. We all had season's passes. I can still picture them in my head.
Yeah. You know, it's just a thing to do with the kids is the way that people see it, right? But it's like, you know, would you take your kids to go to a shelter where there are dogs who are sitting in cages, you know? Like, would you want to see your dog in that situation? Would you want to see your friend in that situation?
Would you volunteer yourself to be in that situation? Like, that's what I say to people now when I hear these comments. How about you put yourself in a cage so some other species can look at you, and you commit yourself to that for the rest of your life for the benefit of their education and entertainment? Mm-hmm. And then they say something like, well, we're not the same as animals. And I said, we feel pain, we feel fear, we feel depression. We're all the same in those ways. We all want to be with our families.
Yeah, yeah. I've said on the show before, I used to volunteer at the Vancouver Aquarium a number of years ago. And I learned while I was there that they do not... Yeah, the education, the so-called education that they provide, they stop short of talking about any of the cognitive abilities of these animals that are held captive there. They talk about all these arbitrary little things and, you know, it's cool, this is what they eat and whatever, but they will not educate you fully about these animals, because if you were being educated, you wouldn't be happy to see them there.
Like if they were to tell you that they can swim thousands of kilometers in a lifetime.
Yeah.
And that they can swim up to, how deep was it? This was brought up in a park board meeting. John Nightingale was asked by one of the commissioners how far they can dive in the wild versus his tanks. I can't remember how far they could deep, but how far they could just swim. But the answer to how deep his tanks are was 7 meters. And he looked like he had his tail between his legs when he answered that question.
100.5 means non-commercial.
But if you call now...
Listener-powered. Community radio. 100.5 means music, public affairs,
I have a dream,
and arts programming.
Right up in here, we'll make a happy little cloud.
You won't find anywhere else on the radio dial. 100.5 is not owned by a huge corporation. We are owned and operated by people like you, by your community.
Serve the people.
The CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio. Find our complete program schedule at www.cooperadio.org.
All right. Oh, I'm excited for this next interview because we at Animal Voices are pleased to introduce the newest member of our team, Vancouver-based animal advocate Natalie Zaracco. And she's a longtime vegan and a longtime friend of mine. And yeah, so we're just going to sit here and learn a little more about her and how she came to be on the show and... ditch animal products. let's hear from you, Natalie. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me here.
Yes, well, very much our pleasure. So first, tell us about yourself. What do you do?
I currently work at Great Pacific Media on a show called Highway Through Hell that you might have heard of. It's very exciting. Not really animal related, though. I'm also a longtime vegan. I've been vegan for probably 8 years now.
Right on, right on. And we were friends back then when you went vegan. So can you tell us a little bit about how you came to decide to no longer consume animal products?
How I went vegan is actually a pretty long story. I would love to be able to say that I was one of those people who went cold tofurkey and just did it overnight, but unfortunately, it took me a long, long time. And I think it's great to talk about this here because I think a lot of people might feel that if they can't do it overnight, it's not worth doing. To which I say, no, even if it takes you years, you can still get there.
Well,
look at me.
That was the topic of last week's show, was, you know, encouraging people with what... you know, what their progression needs to be like for them. Like, we don't have to say you need to go vegan now, but do it in steps. And it's been shown that people are going to be more likely to be successful to become vegan if they do it in steps. So you did that. So I want to know more about that, because I know I did it for me in steps as well. How did that work for you?
I first went vegetarian at 13 years old. Mm-hmm. I think the catalyst was I saw the video Meet Your Meat.
Yeah.
Somewhere, I guess YouTube wasn't even a thing then, but it was floating around the internet.
You're on DVDs, too. Yeah, I have DVDs at home of that short 12-minute film, I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was heartbreaking. I was a huge meat eater as a kid. I was extremely picky. I remember once I was having an A&W hamburger as a child, and I picked every single sesame seed off the bun. All I wanted was bread and meat and candy. But after seeing Meet Your Meat, everything changed for me completely. And I tried to go vegetarian maybe 3 times as a 13-year-old. Didn't really know what I was doing. I ate a lot of salad, got hungry, and backslid a few times before I figured it out.
Did you have support from your parents on that?
Well, they were sort of supportive, but they are a very meat and potatoes family for sure. See, they loved it, so they weren't really sure how to feed me or what to do.
That wouldn't have worked in my household because I just had to eat whatever my mom fed me.
Right.
Same. So I resorted to cooking for myself a lot. That's actually how I learned to cook. I learned to make simple things like spaghetti and things like that. Peanut butter and jam were a big mainstays for me.
Yeah, right on. It's, when I first went vegan too, I wound up cooking all these things. And it's funny, right? Because you think, now I've learned about animal suffering and all this stuff, and I don't want to contribute, and I guess my diet's going to be really boring now. But then you learn all this stuff, and I wound up trying all sorts of different foods that I had never even looked into before, and they're everywhere, and so it's a wonderful learning experience.
Exactly. It's just a huge perception shift, really, just learning a new way to think about food, and that progressed as I turned vegan later, knowing you. You had a big part in that, and you inspired me a lot by posting delicious vegan meals on Facebook.
So yeah.
How old were you when you started your transitioning into veganism? I'm curious about that, because 13 is a really young age to, you said you're vegetarian first, right?
Yeah, first at 13. I had been considering going vegan for years, since high school really, but I just didn't believe I could ever stick with it, because how can you give up cheese? So it was really when I was probably 21, 22, right around when we first met Sinead, I think.
Yeah.
You had gone vegan maybe a year before I did, and then inspired me to finally take the plunge.
Yeah, I was about 20, so that sounds right. What drew you to animal rights? Because you are outspoken about animal issues. So why are animal rights important to you?
Well, we were just talking about this earlier. I've always loved animals from a very early age. And one of my first memories is actually from when I was about 3 years old. I had this adorable Cocker Spaniel puppy named Taffy. Mm-hmm. And I loved her so much. But being a three-year-old, I wasn't really clued in yet about how animals worked, and I tried to ride her like a pony. She didn't like it. She didn't like it. So she started yelping, and she ran away from me, and little three-year-old me suddenly made this connection that animals feel pain, and she was not just a toy, she was a living thing. And I started crying, she was crying, we made up in the end, she was completely fine, but ever since then, I've been very into animal rights, and it's just progressed from there my entire life up to seeing Meet Your Meat. And then later, Earthlings as well was a huge catalyst, along with Sinead's delicious cooking, of course.
Wow, it didn't take you much to make that realization at 3 years old, where for most of us it takes us into our adulthood. So I really like hearing other people's experiences about sort of like when they made a connection, realizing that animals maybe, so your realization was animals have feelings. Other people's might be just simply like animals shouldn't be exploited, like at the aquarium or in zoos, so we shouldn't be using animals.
I want to see your next protest sign saying, don't ride your dog.
Perfect, I love it.
Yeah, you know, it takes years for it to sink in for so many people, and for you all it took was sitting on a puppy.
Exactly. But like I said, it wasn't just one thing, because I had this happen at three. I continued to eat meat for another 10 years. It wasn't until I saw Meet Your Meat that I went vegetarian, and it wasn't until many years later that I went vegan.
Maybe you could describe this film, Meet Your Meat, for all these newbies here that maybe don't really know about it. You can see it on YouTube. It's a PETA video. I've seen it a long time ago. How would you describe it?
It was a horror show, absolutely.
So go watch it, because you want to see horror,
no, no,
right? Everyone's going to want to watch it.
Don't ever tell people that.
I've actually made that challenge to people because as a filmmaker, I'm also a huge lover of horror movies, and I have many friends who love horror films, and I will say, if you love horror so much, why don't you try watching this video?
Good one.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I said you're outspoken about animal issues, and you are, but you are also a self-identified introvert, and so you've got some interesting insights as someone who's spoken for animals as an introvert for all these years. So can you talk about that a little bit? Like, how do you advocate for animals if speaking and being around people a whole bunch is not really your thing?
Yeah, that was a difficult process for me, figuring out how I could contribute. When I get very nervous in big social gatherings, and a lot of the real life activism I have done has been with Sinead, who has helped me get the courage to go out in public and speak to people. But most of what I do is posting articles and links online, which is amazingly effective and takes only a few seconds to do. Just hitting the share button can get someone to see a film like Earthlings or Meet Your Meat, and it can change their entire life. Mm-hmm. So I try to get out there every day. I have a system where I spend at least an hour a day on various websites like Reddit and Facebook and various vegetarian forums, and I will just post links and educate. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't take a lot of time, but it is very effective, and you get to save all that scary meeting people face to face.
What's Reddit all about? Is it like, what I know it's being used. Is it a discussion forum?
Kind of.
It's a giant information sharing forum, I guess you could say, where people post links on various topics. You will often hear horrible things about Reddit, that there are racists and such there, which there absolutely were.
Oh, definitely.
But overall, there are a lot. There's a huge booming vegan community there too, and a vegetarian community. And many people who come there are just kind of asking questions, and they aren't really sure how to do it. And they're asking, "Where do I get my protein?" and such.
Well, they're really lucky to have you there. I hope others as well. Because it must be hard to keep up with all those inquiries and stuff, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think just taking, even if you get annoyed answering the same questions over and over, it's really worth it to just take the time, because that's how you get people to stick with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, sometimes you hear people saying things like, oh, you know, why are you wasting time just arguing with people on the internet? But it's not just arguing with people on the internet. Like, this is where people are, so this is sharing information where people are, and as you say, it is effective. People read stuff and they watch stuff and they listen. So
people on the internet are actually people in real life.
Exactly.
But yes, they act different sometimes when they're on the internet. What have your experiences been with that, Natalie? I don't know, like, if you've ever met any of these people in real life, and or have you had interactions with people on the internet that you've wondered, like, why are they acting that way? That's not like a way a regular person would work. I mean, you have to have a thick skin, I would think.
Yeah, you have to have a very thick skin online. It's a little easier because, like I said, it's not face-to-face, so you can. That's also why they feel more comfortable trolling, though,
right?
Because it's not face-to-face.
They can't get punched.
Yeah,
exactly. But, you know, trolls are usually just doing it for amusement's sake, and they don't care about what you say either way, but other people reading your comments do care, and I think a lot of people have been inspired to go vegetarian or vegan because of these troll fights, which might seem really stupid from the outside. It can be effective.
Is the definition of a troll just like one of those people who make completely ridiculous, inane comments that have no logic and make no sense and are just sort of like, they seem to be there just to spite people?
Devil's advocate.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. They just enjoy pushing people's buttons.
Yeah, they are just arguing on the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you've also got a particular amount of experience with this stuff, as you are a moderator on the forum Veggie Boards, which is one of the biggest online forums for vegans and vegetarians on the internet right now, right?
Yes, absolutely. Veggie Boards is another thing that helped me hugely in my transition to vegan. I was a vegetarian when I joined, and they have a lot of great advice there. But we do get an influx of trolls quite regularly. I've been a moderator there since, I think, 2010, 2011. And, oh boy, it's an almost daily thing, deleting the bacon comments. But we had one interesting event where a forum of duck hunters discovered our forum, and about 20 different duck hunters made fake accounts and started posting GIFs of animals being tortured, a mouse being ripped in half, just various things.
Wow.
It had an interesting spin, though, because a group of us decided to make fake accounts on their site. But rather than trolling, we just started asking them politely, why are you guys doing this? You seem nice. I see pictures of you with their kids. Basically guilting them a lot. And it was surprisingly effective, and we started really engaging with these duck hunters and finding out why they had come to us, and they were just claiming we were just doing it for entertainment. But it turned
just
into
like
several
ducks.
Deep discussions.
Yeah, yeah, just it's like fun.
Some more entertainment
it's
every
fun.
Way.
Wow. Yeah. So are there any particular insights that you've learned from like as being a moderator on veggie boards? How long have you been doing that?
Years. I think since probably, let's say 2011. Yeah, so about 6 years.
Yeah.
The number one thing is patience, because you will get the same questions, you will get the same trolls, you will get the same people over and over. And I think a lot of old-time vegans can kind of forget how it was to be new, so it's easy to get frustrated and a little tired of the questions and a little tired of the trolling and the sarcastic comments, but it's worth it to put the time in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in addition to your online activism and everything, then you have a couple of animals that live with you at home. Well, three if you include your boyfriend. Our friend Tiger. Hi, Tiger. He's the boyfriend.
Hi, Tiger.
Right. People think he's the cat.
Yeah, he's not the cat. He's the boyfriend.
So, yeah, a common mistake. Yeah. My cat's name is Mo. My boyfriend's name is Tiger.
Yeah.
I also have another cat named Evie, who's a real sweetheart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one thing we were talking about before, and every time I go visit, after Mo rubs his face all over my feet, Mo's got a foot fetish thing going on. But nice. He and Evie are so different. You got them both at different times, and I just feel like they're perfect examples of how animals are such individuals. You can't just say, you know, cats or pigs or whatever kind of animal enjoys these conditions, because they're all individuals just like humans. And so Evie and Mo both have their very different desires and preferences for things.
Absolutely. Mo is extremely outgoing and friendly. He loves people. He loves going for walks on a leash, and he will charge at large dogs like German shepherds, thinking he can take them. Evie is very shy. She kind of has a sad backstory. Before we got her, she spent 2 years living in a shed with almost no human contact. So she's extremely shy, and when we first got her, she spent a lot of her time hiding under the bed. She's more comfortable and much more cuddly now, but they are like night and day, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think when people see, like for instance, cows, they see a large herd of steer, it's easy to say they have no individual personalities. But if you just take one of these animals away and you spend time with them as an individual, you see they have preferences, they have emotions, they have thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, get to know them.
Yeah, individual personalities for sure. Yeah. So since you've gone vegan, what are, for some listeners who might not have listened to the show and are going, what is this vegan stuff they're talking about? What do vegans eat anyway? That's one of the most common questions. And so I want to ask you, what are some of your favorite things to eat? What are some of your staples? You're a busy person, you work in television, and you've got all this stuff, and so yeah, what are your favorite things to eat around, and like around town in Vancouver?
Just leaves and grass, right?
Yeah, you know, sawdust with dry tofu on top. It's delicious. High protein. But no, seriously, we are so lucky to live in Vancouver. It's a fantastic city for vegans. One of my favorite restaurants right now is Meat on Main, and its sister location, Meat Gastown. Fantastic food there, and it is not healthy. Do not think you are going to go there and get some dry salad.
You can get the sunshine salad. That's
true.
Healthy.
That's true. They do have healthy food, but they specialize in delicious deep-fried grease.
Yes.
So if you want to try some absolutely decadent food that you would never guess is even vegan, go there.
I did have the poutine there just to see. It was pretty good. But I think I'm good for now, like forever.
Hang
for
on.
Poutine.
I get the macro bowl. It's brown rice, cashew gravy, kale, tofu, mushrooms, pea sprouts. It's not all junk food.
Yeah. No, that's what vegans eat right there.
I like that one.
Yeah.
That's my favorite.
Now, with those, with Meat on Main and Meat in Gastown, my favorite thing to do is go and get one of the healthier things, like a salad, and that way I can get dessert.
Oh, their desserts. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, excellent.
Shout out to Kim. She gave us a free dessert last time all the Animal Voices crew were in there.
Wow.
It was my birthday. Thank you, Kim. We love you. You're our favorite waitress.
Showed up too late.
Yeah, so where else or what else do you like to eat around town? And
There are a lot of other good restaurants. There are many, surprisingly a large amount of regular non-vegan restaurants will have fantastic vegan options if you check. There's also Virtuous Pie, which opened up about a year ago, I think, which has a fantastic vegan slice.
Yeah, I love the rise of vegan pizza in this town. There's so many more vegan pizza options than there used to be, which is wonderful.
I'm going there after work for two reasons. One, to get a gift card as a wedding present for someone who's getting married tomorrow. And two, to get a pizza for my RMT. So
whoa, I'll be your RMT. I was thinking
of that because you go there all the time, but my regular RMT really likes pizza, so he's getting a treat today.
He might feed you some through the hole, through the face piece hole. You're lucky.
Okay, well, just wrapping up here, are there any last words? Well, last words. You'll be on the show. You'll hear from Natalie again, everybody. But
she's not going to die of protein deficiency.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
Anything else you'd like to share with us or any other questions that anybody else here in the studio has for Natalie?
I would just like to say that even if you're scared of going vegan or you are vegan and you're scared of speaking out, don't be. You can just take little steps and make a huge difference just by hitting share, sharing something with someone online.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's wonderful
advice.
I think
that's great advice for an introvert like my sister who's listening. And she's been doing that.
And engaging with the trolls can veganize a troll, believe it or not. It's happened to me so many times.
Oh, yeah. I've had at least 3 troll encounters where in the end they said they were considering going vegan. So it can happen.
Just be nice to them. They didn't get enough hugs when they were growing up or something.
Well, thank you so much, Natalie, for telling us a bit more about yourself and for joining us on Animal Voices Radio. It's so great to have you here.
Thanks so much.
All right, you are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM, CFRO, Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, BC, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. And now, Jen, you've got some news for us.
Yes, we made a promise recently that we were going to do more positive news stories, but because we focus on animal rights issues, I'm sorry to say it's not always happy. So an extensive survey of 903 species of Canadian birds, fish, mammals, reptiles, and amphibians over more than 4 decades has found that half of them are in serious population decline. Declining species lost a total of 83% of their numbers between 1970 and 2014, says the report released Thursday by the World Wildlife Fund. Species protected by federal legislation shrank nearly as quickly as those that weren't. In general terms, the Species at Risk Act does not seem to have made any difference, said World Wildlife Fund President David Miller. There's an incredible urgency to reverse the decline. The Living Planet Index could be the most comprehensive assessment of wildlife numbers in Canada. The organization looked at 3,689 different populations of 386 kinds of birds, 365 fish species, 106 different mammals, and 46 reptiles and amphibians. It combined more than 400 data sets from government, academia, and industry and citizen science using peer-reviewed method developed by the Zoological Society of London. Overall numbers for all 903 species decreased by 8% over the 44 years studied. A total of 45 species were stable and 407 increased. Many of those benefited from large-scale conservation measures. Waterfowl, which increased by 54%, have enjoyed widespread wetland preservation. No thanks to the duck hunters we mentioned earlier. Birds such as falcons are no longer harmed by DDT and grew by 88%. Others on the increase were generalist species such as deer or geese that live well alongside humans. Their survey found a familiar combination of reasons for declining populations: habitat loss, climate change, invasive species, and pollution. Miller said it was surprising to find legislation such as the Species at Risk Act passed in 2004 has done nothing to slow the decline. In other news, when Hurricane Irma set Florida in its sight, Governor Rick Scott warned 5.6 million Floridians to evacuate. When the Category 3 storm slammed down on the Sunshine State, people flocked to safety, whether it be a shelter, basement, or a closet. The point is that these people had a choice in whether to wait out the storm or to evacuate, but not everyone had the same choice. Drone footage shared by Rick O'Berry's Dolphin Project shows the reality that whales and dolphins in captivity have to face day in and day out. They don't have the option to flee to safety, find their own food when they're hungry, or to find comfort with their families during scary situations. It's sad to imagine that Lolita, the orca whale in the video, must have been thinking, feeling as the storm thinking and feeling as the storm raged all around her, the loud noises, fierce winds, and heavy rains all going on with no one in sight to reassure her that everything would be okay. While smaller animals were able to be relocated, because of Lolita's size, she was left to endure the storm on her own. Miami Sea Aquarium has had quite a backlash from my activist friends who live in Florida, and they have not been responding with anything that's been meaningful for her. She did survive the storm, but this is a really sad situation for her to have to endure that.
Mm-hmm.
In other news, this is good news. A vegan Saudi prince is on a mission to end factory farming. Vegan food company Hampton Creek has announced impressive additions to their board of directors, including former executives at DuPont, Heinz, as well as Prince Khalid bin Alawid, who is the founder and CEO of KBW Ventures, an investor and animal rights activist. Prince Khalid seems like the perfect fit for Hampton Creek's board, considering he recently made an investment in Memphis Meats, a San Francisco-based lab-cultured meat, or clean meat company, as it's also been called. Although Hampton Creek is best known for their egg-free mayo product, they too are getting into the clean meat market, claiming they will be able to bring lab-cultured meat to market by 2018. The company has recently raised a staggering $220 million to advance their brand's focus on developing plant-based or cultured alternatives to animal products. Do we have time for one more news story, or am I going over time here? So two animal rights groups last week were granted the right to intervene in the Vancouver Aquarium's lawsuit against the Park Board. The aquarium launched legal proceedings last spring following Vancouver Park Board's bylaw amendment that banned cetaceans from its Marine Science Centre in its future. It's asking for judicial review in BC Supreme Court, naming the Park Board and City of Vancouver as respondents, and wants the court to rule that the bylaw amendment is invalid and of no force and effect. Late last Friday, the court granted Animal Justice and ZooCheck leave to intervene in the lawsuit. The aquarium's freedom of expression claim in this disturbing lawsuit could permanently undermine the animal protection laws right across Canada, said Camille Labchuk, lawyer and executive director of Animal Justice. Animal Justice and ZooCheck are pleased the court has recognized that our perspective on behalf of animals must be heard. We will urge in court to protect whales and dolphins and other animals across the country from the suffering they endure in captivity. The two groups plan to submit to the court that confining cetaceans should not be considered, quote, expression.
All right, thanks for that news, Jen.
So today on the show, we have Maria Sorosky of Vancouver Orphan Kitten Rescue Association. Welcome, Maria.
Oh, hello, Jen. Hi, listeners.
So how and when did this much-needed organization begin, and what's your involvement in it?
Well, we started back in the year 2000. Karen Duncan and myself were fostering little tiny newborns for the SPCA hospital, and I was running the foster program, and we decided that it was a great need for the little kittens to come into us so they'd be placed in foster homes and being taken care of.
So I recently started following you on Facebook, and even though I work full-time in animal rights issues, I was surprised to know how many cats are taken off the streets in desperate situations in our city. Can you give our listeners an idea of how many cats you take in and what the general circumstances in these cases are?
Yeah, well, the way cats come to us is usually people will phone about a mom and kittens in their backyard or garage, that sort of thing, or strays, or feral cats, or just a tame cat that's coming around their place. So they give us a call, and we go out and either have to trap them if they're feral, or bring them straight into our rescue. Last year, it was around 1,400, although those numbers are a little bit, you need to understand that a lot of the cats and kittens especially are coming from Surrey, because we haven't been using trap, neuter, return of the ferals there that long. It's only been a few years. So, you know, most of the cats are coming from Surrey, but there still are in Vancouver, of course.
And so this must be a really expensive operation. What costs do you have, and how do you raise funds for this?
Well, we are getting funds from donations from the public, and we have a walkathon coming up. What happens is there's very few grants that are available for animal rescues, so we have to get those funds by donations through different events and fundraising.
And can people get charity receipts for those?
Oh, absolutely. We're a registered charity.
Great. So tell me, what makes VOCRA different from the SPCA?
It's a little different because cats need to be brought into the SPCA shelter, whereas we go out and get them. A lot of cats on the streets, especially cats that have been lost or abandoned, are very scared. And, you know, people just can't pick them up and bring them in. So that's one difference there. And the other is that we go out and we do the trapping of the feral cats and get them fixed, that sort of thing, where the SPCA does not directly do it. They fund some of it to some of the smaller rescues around the province, but mainly we work on our own with our own donations to do that.
Okay. And what do you want people to know about caring for their cats based on your experience in witnessing cats who aren't being cared for?
Well, you know, you just can't have a cat and do nothing with it. You know, it needs vet care. So twice a year it needs to go see a vet. And if it is going outside, you have to give that cat flea medicine, because there's so many kitties that are just covered in fleas, especially in the summertime, need to be cared for. And mainly health-wise, you know, they need to, if they're sick, they need to go to a vet and be cared for that way. And if they're indoor kitties, you need to really give them a stimulated experience inside your house of lots of cat trees and toys and play with them and that sort of thing. Cats need care just as much as we do.
And I know that you often are dealing with situations where you're hearing about, you posted on Facebook about somebody that had given flea medication from Walmart and their cat died. Can you elaborate on that? Because a lot of people might not have the funding to buy the more expensive flea medications, and they're thinking these kinds of things are sufficient.
Yeah, there's several brands of flea medications that are sold in box stores, like Walmart, anywhere like that. It's Sargent's Hearts, Zodiac, Spot On. All those flea meds for cats have been toxic in many, many instances, causing the cats to seizure and die. So it's very important that people do not buy these cheap flea medications or shampoos, for that matter, or the collars that go on, but rather go to their veterinarian and ask for either Revolution or Advantage, which is a safe flea medication. And I know it's hard for people who are lower income, but you know, you do have to be able to save your money and spend that on proper medication that's not toxic to your cat.
Okay, and those, I think they're about $50 per application, is that right?
Not per application, per box of six.
Okay.
Yeah. But okay. A lot of the vets will just give out one dose, mm-hmm. you know?
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. And now let's talk about coyotes. That's a big problem in Vancouver. My cat, Scout, was killed by a coyote years ago because I let her out at night. I selfishly didn't want to have a litter box in my house, so I left the window open all the time. I now know better, and I don't do this anymore, but can you elaborate on this issue for us? You're very knowledgeable on this one.
It's so different. You know, I'm from Saskatchewan, and we never had coyotes. And people moving here or coming here from other places don't realize that there are coyotes right in your city. And you may be in watching TV at night, and they're prowling the streets going after your cats. So please, please, you must keep your kitties in just before dusk and let them out in the morning if you have to. When it's daylight, because the coyotes are after the cats. There's a neighborhood watch that was just recently set up, and they've got a coyote watch. So if you've got a neighborhood watch in your area, it's really good that maybe you start a coyote watch up. Also,
can you explain what that is for our listeners that didn't see that article?
Yeah, what it is it's the neighborhood watch people, and what they do is when they see a coyote, they alert by text to all the people in the neighborhood that there's a coyote out and where it is, so that they can get their cat in as fast as possible, because cats are being taken by coyotes during the day also. It's usually at night, but also during the day.
Well, I live near Granville and Broadway area, so anyone who knows that area knows there's not a lot of parks around. It's definitely a city neighborhood. And I came home one day, and there were 8 coyotes walking right down the middle of my road.
Yeah.
And so I tell this story to people who think, you're only going to encounter coyotes in areas where there's parkland. And there's not. And this is where my cat was killed by one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Do you have any heartwarming stories to tell us of all your years working with BOCRA? Any really great stories?
Well, you know, the trouble is that when cats are not fixed, and that's the most important thing, they need to be fixed. When they're lost or abandoned and not fixed, they produce kittens out, you know, on their own in people's garage, underneath garages and such, and it's just awful. So we need people to call us if they see, you know, any strays, and we can go and get them right away. So spaying and neutering is the most important thing. But heartwarming stories. Oh, well, you know that chicken slaughterhouse down on Commercial and
Hastings?
You know, Hastings? Yeah. Yeah, I was called there last year. A mom and kittens had little kittens in the area where the slaughterhouse is there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went and I trapped them. And I also got this old male with the biggest, huge cheeks you would ever believe. And we called him Brando, and he was so beat up and elderly, and he's really doing great now. But, you know, oh my gosh, some of these cats are just in rough shape. They're tame cats that have gone out, and they're lost, and they can't fend for themselves. And mm-hmm. if we can bring them in and help them, it's just so wonderful.
Well, you have a no-kill policy, don't you, with BOCRA?
Yeah, no kill means, well, of course, we won't let a cat suffer.
Right.
You know, right. through anything. We're not that type of no kill. But we do not kill a cat because of lack of space or because it has a cold or because it needs a dental or a broken leg or a $2,000 surgery. No, we don't.
Okay. And so that puts a little bit of pressure on you to find foster homes. That's pretty much how BOCRA mm-hmm. works, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
tell us a little bit about
that.
Pressure
to find foster homes, but money. You know, we need the money to be able to do this. And right now, we just pretty well break even. But, you know, it's quite a struggle. If people want to support us being no-kill, then we need donations.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a bit about how people can volunteer to be fosters and also how they can get in touch with you to give donations.
Oh, sure. So it's VOCRA, VOKRA.ca. And on the website is Volunteer tab, and there are so many volunteer opportunities with BOCRA besides being a foster or a trapper or a volunteer. We have a building in East Van where we care for the cats that just come in. We have volunteers who feed and clean them. We need fundraising volunteers. We need IT, graphic designers, anyone in that has experience with computers, people who can interview adopters, people who can take care of the foster team and the foster parents. It's just an array. It's just amazing. And practically, you can imagine we need volunteers for.
Sounds like you definitely have a lot of positions available for volunteers.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Are you open 7 days a week for volunteers to come in and do anything that they can?
Yeah, we're open 7 days a week, and at the building, we train everyone, so they go through a training session first so that they're not just throwing into anything.
Yeah.
And definitely, as far as the public, even though they can't volunteer, please let us know if there's any stray cats around. It's really important. It's getting these cats off the streets.
Well, I just want to tell my personal story about that because I think a lot of people may be in the same situation I was.
Yeah.
So last winter, we had a really cold winter, as you may remember.
Yeah,
and there's a cat that's been hanging around my house probably for a couple of years, and I just figured it was somebody's indoor-outdoor cat because it wasn't always around. But this winter, it was around on some of the coldest days, and I thought nobody would put their cat out on a day like this. So I eventually talked to you, borrowed a trap, and trapped it, brought it in. I should say him or her. I can't remember if it was a he or she.
Yeah, it was a boy.
It was a boy. You remember.
Yeah.
And there was no tattoo, I believe, or it wasn't traceable or something. So we ended up finding a really nice home for him.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
I just
right.
regret how long that cat was homeless for without me knowing, because it didn't. He didn't look like he was homeless. He didn't look really thin, and he wasn't always begging for food. So I think the lesson here for people is don't assume that is someone's indoor-outdoor cat. that just doesn't have a collar. So just call Vocra and see what they suggest, right?
Absolutely, because we can check for a tattoo or microchip, and then we plaster the internet with Found Cat, and we, you know, check the neighborhood, put up posters, and usually they're not claimed. But if they are claimed, the owners are not mad at all. They're just happy somebody's looking out for their cat.
Well, you and I had another scenario like that just last week, didn't we?
That's right.
I'll tell that story too. So I was coming out of one of my favorite vegan restaurants, Po Kong, and it was late at night, and there was this beautiful one-year-old cat that was wandering the streets in between two very busy roads, and I was really concerned, and none of the lights were on in the houses nearby. So I spoke with somebody walking down the sidewalk and said, do you recognize the cat? Because she lived right there, and she said no. So I called you because I have your cell phone number on my phone, and you came and trapped her and managed to get the tattoo and find out that she lived in one of those homes, and they weren't mad. The people were, you know, understanding that that happened, and then we got an opportunity to talk to them about coyotes and traffic and everything else.
That's right, and getting that cat in, you know, before dark, which mm-hmm. is really important. I hope they do it.
I think they've had a couple of conversations with us, and they were very receptive, and I think so. So
yeah.
And one last thing I want to talk about is the interesting sort of what you do when you bring a cat in. I came in with you with this cat that was from my neighborhood, and you said to me, hold my cell phone, we're going to do a live video for Facebook. And since then, I've watched your live Facebook videos. So tell us why you do that and where people can find that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's one thing to just call a cat, rescues cats, but to actually see it live or recorded is really important for people to see exactly what we do, and that we take very good care of the cats and try our best to, find their owners and that thing by identifying whether they have identification or not, which is really important to tell people to put a collar with a tag on their cat.
That would solve so many problems.
But they really need to see what we do. So we're trying to do that more and get people more involved and where their dollars are actually going to.
Mm-hmm. I was really impressed with how you give stray cats or maybe people's cats immediate care that they need.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And if they have a wound or anything on them like that, even if we don't know that they're owned, you know, we try our best to find the owner right away, we take them to the vet. And, you know, get whatever care we can for them as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible. Well, thank you so much for all your work, Maria. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
The community needs you. And what I suggest to our listeners right now is if you can pull out your cell phones and add this contact for Vocra so that if you do see a stray cat somewhere and you forget the name of Vocra, you've got it right there on your phone as the cat rescue place. So go ahead and give us that number.
Oh, boy. I believe it's info@vocra.ca. Mm-hmm. I don't know the phone number, though.
Well, that's okay. Even if they have the website, at least they'll have that on their phone.
I believe it's on there.
Okay. I like to have people, you know, save the SPCA hotline on their phones for hot dogs in cars and, you know, critter care phone numbers for other types of animals that they may see in distress. It's just good to have that at your fingertips, right?
Yeah, that's right.
These things happen when we least expect it, so... Okay, well, thank you so much, Maria, and hopefully you get some volunteers out of people listening to this show.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks, listeners.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
So that was Maria Sarovsky from Vocra, Vancouver Orphan Kitten Rescue Association, and she didn't have the number handy, but I just looked it up. It's 604-731-2913. You can just pop that in your phone, and we're always seeing stray cats around. So now we just have some events. So tomorrow from 11 to 1 o'clock, join environmental activists at the Kitsilano Beach Cleanup hosted by Surf Rider Foundation Vancouver. You can meet everyone at the Boathouse Restaurant at 11 o'clock. And also tomorrow from 4 to 7 p.m., meet animal rights advocates at the Commercial and Broadway SkyTrain Station for another Earthlings Experience event. And this is based on the Earthlings documentary, which you can find free online. We'll be showing the public video footage of where their food comes from and engaging in discussions about adopting a vegan lifestyle. All supplies are provided. You can hold a TV or engage in public outreach. More information on Facebook at Earthlings Experience, hosted by TV Outreach for Animals, which is actually run by a former undercover investigator from Mercy for Animals who went undercover across Canada Canada to expose the inherent cruelty on our farms. We will also post this event to our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. Everyone's welcome. On Wednesday, September the 20th, is Vancouver's Minimalist Meetup from 5:30 to 8 o'clock at 345 Robson Street. Get together and discuss mindfulness. A few questions to think about before the meeting. What daily actions do you take to declutter your mental clutter? How do you decompress and relax after a chaotic, stressful week? If you meditate, what kinds of meditation practices have you adopted? After embracing a minimalist lifestyle, what things in your life have you become more aware of? Meet at the tables outside the Flying Wedge Pizza. Saturday, September 30th, from 12 to 5, come to my house for a pop-up shop featuring gently used and tags still on brand spanking new designer clothing for men and women. 50% of proceeds will go to animal charities, including the Whale Sanctuary Project. More information on all these events I've announced are on the Animal Voices Vancouver Facebook page. And I just want to leave you all with a call to action. Please help activists get signatures on the petition to end whale captivity in Canada. The Parliament is having their third reading on this, so this is our chance to change history. This must be done in person, not online. We have the deadline of September 30th to mail those petitions to Parliament. So please contact me on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. I will send you the PDF for the petition, along with all the answers to commonly asked questions if you feel that you're not educated enough to be engaging with the public on this. I've got everything you need. And you've been listening to the Animal Voices show on CFRO 100.5 FM in Vancouver, Canada. We want to hear from you online. Find us at animalvoices.org, where you can find all of our podcasts from past shows, on Facebook at Animal Voices Vancouver, Twitter at Animal Voices YVR, and email radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Stay tuned for our show next Friday for a discussion on World Elephant Day. And we leave you today with a song called The Story by Brandy Carlisle. After that, we will have Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith.
All of these lines across my face tell you the story. No one to tell them to. It's true, I was made for you. I climbed across the mountain top. Hiding the words that don't come out.